From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Children's necklaces from Walmart, collectible drinking glasses from McDonald's. In recent months, millions of children's products have been recalled due to high levels of carcinogens. This hour, we look at the potential dangers in these products and ask whether we're doing enough to keep children safe. My guests are Stephen Gilbert, author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, The Health Effects of Common Chemicals, Scott Wolfson of the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and Corrine Harrison of Games & More at the Valley West Mall in Des Moines. Our discussion gets underway right after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. You've no doubt heard about it several times in our news recently. In the past 6 months, millions of children's products have been recalled due to high levels of cadmium. Cadmium is a heavy metal that's toxic and thought to cause cancer. At the beginning of June, McDonald's recalled 12 million collectible drinking glasses. That was just after Claire's recalled some 20,000 charm bracelets due to high levels of cadmium. And earlier this year, Walmart recalled over 50,000 children's necklaces just after Buy Right Designs of New Jersey recalled an unknown number of Christmas charm bracelets for that same reason. So this hour, we want to explore the risks such items pose and ask, are we doing enough to keep youngsters safe from harmful chemicals in their toys? Joining us for the hour, and first of all, Stephen Gilbert. Gilbert is the director and founder of the Institute of Neurotoxicology and Neurological Disorders. He is also the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, The Health Effects of Common Chemicals. Welcome to The Exchange, Stephen Gilbert.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Tell us, what is cadmium past a heavy metal, and why is it used in toys anywhere?
Well, cadmium has got a lot of interesting uses, and one of those on toys, particularly in the paint. So it's like lead, and similar that it makes the paint shiny, and it's a protective. It's been used in a lot of metals. It's easy to manipulate, and it's good for manufacturing.
Mm-hmm. So we had the big blow up over lead a few years ago. Paints with lead in them coming from China. So is this a migration? People say, I can't use lead, so I'll use cadmium, which seems silly because that's also a carcinogen, right?
I think it's a little bit of a migration, but I also think a lot of cadmium was always there. The people were using that and contaminated a lot of these products. Just like with lead, it was easy to do, and it's probably been a little migration, but there's really no reason to have these products in children's toys because they can be fatal when consumed, if they're swallowed, these little pieces. And long-term, you get exposure from the material, from the hand-to-mouth behavior of children.
Mm-hmm. So cadmium, a heavy metal, it occurs naturally in nature. It's actually quite plentiful, I believe. When do levels of cadmium become toxic and carcinogenic?
Well, it takes that's over quite a bit of exposure. It can be acutely harmful, and cadmium affects the kidney, for example. But the cancer effects are chiefly through inhalation. So, for example, cigarette smokers will have higher blood cadmium levels. But children will absorb more of the cadmium orally, so you want to be very careful about that. And like I said, it affects the kidneys. It concentrates in the kidneys and liver. Mm-hmm. So you want to reduce exposure to these materials.
Mm-hmm. So if we have cadmium used in a paint on a toy, is it giving off gases the way mercury would, for example?
No, they would not give off any kind of gas. The child would mouth the toy or have it get the material on its hands, like with lead. Cadmium would get on their fingers, and they put their fingers in their mouth, or they mouth the toy or mouth the jewelry or the material. Just like with those sippy cups, the cups that have the cadmium on them, they're handled by the hands, and a little bit of acid on the fingers would take that cadmium off and then get into the mouth. And like I mentioned, children absorb more of these materials than adults do. For lead, for example, children absorb about 50% of the lead they ingest, whereas adults only absorb about 10%. Mm-hmm. There's data indicating that cadmium is somewhat similar and that children absorb more of the cadmium.
So give us, if you could take us on a little bit of a fantastic voyage to tell us what cadmium does in the body. Once it gets into the body, where does it go? How does it potentially do damage?
Well, cadmium when ingested, it moves primarily to the kidney, where it can affect at higher concentrations, you'll damage the kidney and you'll excrete more proteins and glucose, more sugars. So you can do pretty severe kidney damage. It also affects the bones, so it weakens bones, which is really important for young children because children are growing quickly. They need a lot of calcium. So I think those are the two main effects that you have to be concerned about for children.
Mm-hmm. Joining us now in our discussion along with Stephen Gilbert, Corinne Harrison. Corinne Harrison is the owner of Games and More. That's a toy store at the Valley West Mall in Des Moines. Good afternoon, Corinne.
Hi.
Hi. So have any of your items in your stall store been subject to recall because of cadmium?
No, not from cadmium, no.
Okay, but you've had other recalled items.
Yes, we have.
Okay, so can you tell us about one recent example of an item that was recalled and for what reason?
One recent one was a children's toy that was much like a rattle or an expanding ball, and the little hinges were not secure enough, and the company discovered, I mean, it was a new release, and they discovered that those hinges weren't secure enough, and then the little beads that were part of the toy could come loose, and they were small enough for mm-hmm. them to swallow. Mm-hmm. And we hadn't even sold any yet. They were a brand-new product, and so that was caught early. Mm-hmm. And another really interesting one was actually a packaging. They recalled for packaging.
Mm-hmm. What was in the packaging?
It was a phthalate problem. It was a felt board product. And it was packaged in a vinyl envelope, a clear vinyl envelope, so very pretty and shiny for packaging, and you could use it to store the product in after, you know, the child was playing with it. And the package was recalled, so we had to unpackage everything.
Mm.
Everything inside was still in another plastic wrap, and we just put hang tags on it and put it back on the shelf.
Mm, so sometimes a fix is very simple. I suppose that not all fixes are that simple.
Right.
Of course, more complicated is when the item is out on the shelf, has been purchased, some of the items, and then what happens?
Well, it's kind of like a fire drill around here. As soon as we get a recall notice, I call up to the front, and it's like, okay, everybody, here we go. And everybody immediately scours to find every product that's, you know, on the recall, and we get them off the shelf and post our signs immediately at the register. And then take care of it as we're directed.
Mm-hmm. Where does the fire alarm come from? How are you notified?
No, that's me.
Where are you notified so that you can set off that fire alarm?
Sorry. usually mail and email. Mail is a little disconcerting to me because I'm concerned about the time between. But email has been the majority of times I've been notified. One time we were very angered when I found out by myself through, I believe it was, I read the New York Times online a lot, and I think that's where I saw it, and I pretty much went ballistic.
Yeah, right. Your wholesalers, the people who supply you with toys, what are their obligations in terms of informing you about recalled toys, items, when that happens?
Well, everybody has to notify everybody immediately as fast as they can, and generally we deal directly with the companies as opposed to distributors.
Mm-hmm. And some are quicker than others, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, it's funny because it was a very big name, the one that really fell down on their knees that time. And like I said, it should not have hit the public before we knew. Because the last thing I want is for a consumer to come in the store and see something they know is recalled sitting on my shelf. That would be not how I want to do business.
Are there certain names connected with recalls more often than others?
Oh, yeah.
That you become wary of and you say, well, I'll order that product, I'll put it on my shelf, but I'm going to be extra wary.
A bit. I do that in the first place in that I don't carry a lot of products that the mass market carries because that tends to be your big problem. The things are not followed closely enough. They're doing so much business in such huge numbers overseas that they lose control. And that's where lots of your problems come in. And so I most generally carry smaller companies, award-winning companies that can pay better attention to their products.
Stephen Gilbert, I want to go to you. We have a couple minutes before we want to take a short break, and then we're going to hear a discussion I had yesterday with Scott Wolfson of the Consumer Product Safety Commission. But I would like to have you explain a couple things to us. There are two entities that have a bearing at least on our two entities on our discussion today, toys and toxicology, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, and this Consumer Product Safety Division, Safety Commission, and we'll hear the Director of Public Affairs in just a moment. tell us what roles they play in keeping toys safe.
Well, the best of my knowledge, the EPA does not have a big role in toy safety. They're more of looking at chemicals and assessing the hazards of different chemicals. For example, they'd work on data for lead or mercury and set standards for exposure in those chemicals. So they're more dealing with the chemicals. Where the Consumer Product Safety Commission, they have to look at the safety of the product, look at any chemical exposures, look at potential hazards like swallowing hazards, and they're the ones really in charge of ensuring that the products are safe for children's handling and use.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Well, we want to have that discussion in just a moment, but what else? When you talk about what other chemicals besides the cadmium have we typically found in toys, Stephen Gilbert, that are potentially hazardous?
Well, you've mentioned lead a little bit. I think that's a really big one that's showed up in jewelry. It showed up in, interesting mention, the wrapping. It has showed up in wrappings because it's a paint used on paint, and it's used on the paint of the toys. Phthalates is another important one. It's used.
What are phthalates?
So phthalates are a chemical that softens rubber. So typically you would get phthalates, a classic one is that rubber ducky, the children's toys, bathtub toys, the little squishy toys.
Oh, yeah, or what about a pacifier?
Well, most pacifiers are made out of rubber, so they're not as big a concern. But those little toys are, when you open up a new shower curtain, a plastic shower curtain, sort of smell that new material in there, that's sort of the phthalates. So they actually off-gas, and you can absorb them. And they're in a range of materials. But that's another example where we need to be a lot more careful about what we're exposing our children to, because children are not little adults. They per body weight, they absorb more. They eat more, drink more, breathe more than adults do. So even a small exposure turns into a big dose for children. So I think we need to do more to protect our children's health.
Okay, Stephen Gilbert, I'd like to have you go into that more when we come back. Stephen Gilbert is the director and founder of the Institute of Neurotoxicology and Neurological Disorders, which is located where, Stephen?
We're in Seattle, Washington. We have a large website called Toxipedia.
Okay. Stephen is also the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, The Health Effects of Common Chemicals. Also joining us, Corinne Harrison, owner of Games & More, a toy store at the Valley West Mall in Des Moines. And we'd like to, coming up in just a moment, Scott Wolfson, Director of Public Affairs for the Consumer Product Safety Commission. Well, he couldn't join us live today, so after the break, we'll hear a conversation I had with him yesterday about these cadmium recalls. Then later in the hour, we'll talk more with Stephen Gilbert and Corinne Harrison and answer any questions you may have about potentially dangerous substances in toys. Are you a parent? How do you keep your child safe? Have you become more wary when it comes to buying toys precisely because of these problems? Tell us your story. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. We'll be back in 1 minute. Welcome back to The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. At this hour, with the backdrop of several toy recalls due to cadmium in recent months, collectible Shrek drinking glasses for McDonald's, kids' necklaces, we're discussing toxicology and toys. We invited Scott Wolfson, Director of Public Affairs at the Consumer Product Safety Commission, to be part of our discussion live. Unfortunately, his schedule didn't allow that. So here's a conversation I had with him yesterday about the recent recalls. I began by asking him about the mission of the Consumer Product Safety Commission.
We can basically define who we are by the products that we don't deal with. So we don't deal with food, drugs, cars, guns, tobacco. But essentially everything else in your house, in and around your house, we have jurisdiction over it, and we're working to keep you and your family safe. But we're an agency that really does touch the safety, the lives of a family every week.
An agency of the U.S. government.
An independent federal agency. We don't report to any cabinet agency. We have an appointed chairman by the president, but really we report to Congress. Most importantly, we report to the American consumer.
So, Scott, there have been 4 cadmium recalls listed since January, the charm bracelets, the necklace, the McDonald's Shrek collector's drinking glasses. There were none before that. Why all of a sudden these recalls due to cadmium?
there's actually a very clear difference between those four recalls. The jewelry had very high cadmium. We use the word toxic in association with those recalls. Cadmium that was off the charts, very high, very serious. With the McDonald's glasses, it's a case where the company did the right thing. It's enough to cause concern, enough to be a long-term problem, cause adverse health effects to a child, but we don't want the parent to be scared, to be fearful for their child if they had those glasses. We want them to be responsive. We want them to take action right away, to take it away from the child, but we want parents to also know when to be scared and when not to be scared. The jewelry is scary. Children mouth it. Children have swallowed pieces of jewelry. If that lingers in the stomach, whether it's lead or cadmium or other heavy metals, that can be very, very serious. So we want to put everything into perspective where we can.
Mm-hmm. But at least according to our research, there were no cadmium recalls or related recalls prior to January. Is that incorrect?
That is correct. But what we want parents to understand is we are doing everything in our power to not have the next wave. We don't want cadmium to be the next wave after lead.
Mm-hmm.
So what have we done? We have a stronger surveillance program at ports of call across this country than we ever have had before. We turned away a shipment of jewelry that had high levels of cadmium, didn't even allow it to get to store shelves. The chairman of this agency, Inez Tenenbaum, delivered a speech in Hong Kong that was as clear as day to Asian manufacturers and Asian regulators. There cannot be substitution of cadmium for lead. We've made great progress on lead. We now have the toughest, lowest lead levels in the world in this country now. Parents should know that. We don't want cadmium to be the next problem.
So what has, if I'm understanding you correctly, Scott, the what has changed here is that you're being more proactive trying to head off potential problems. It's not that we discovered prior to January that cadmium was a carcinogenic. We've known that for a long time.
That's correct.
It's that you want to take a proactive stance and actually be more diligent in warning and catching potential products.
In our perspective, to be proactive, you need to be tougher and you need to be more direct. And in being direct, we're talking about going to the source, talking to the Chinese government, talking to Chinese manufacturers. Let's go back to lead. What many parents don't know is in the aftermath of our warnings, all the recalls we did here, we convinced the Chinese government to start shutting down factories that weren't complying with U.S. safety standards. Now, on cadmium, the Chinese government, our counterpart agency, sent out a directive to manufacturers to not substitute cadmium in place of lead, almost the same language that Chairman Tenenbaum used. So we have a common understanding here. We want that understanding to result in the right types of products being made and sent to this country.
And you have indications that it's having the desired effect in China?
We do. And we're going to continue to be diligent. You know, consumers and parents throughout Iowa are going to see more recalls. But we don't want it to get to the scope, to the size of what we went through in 2007, 2008, where every week it was just one recall after another. It really weighed on the minds of parents and what their options were when they went into that store to purchase a product for their child. We don't want that situation to happen again. We want them to have confidence, that there's rules that are aimed at keeping their kids safe.
Mm-hmm. I can picture all kinds of parents listening to your words, listening to our program today, saying that's fine about future products. I'm sure glad that we're stepping up the control of cadmium and making sure that's not in toys. But what about all the toys already in my kid's toy chest, the ones that were made 5 years ago, 3 years ago? What should parents be doing there?
A combination of issues there. Number one, it's so important to be aware of recalls because we may talk about, lead and cadmium, but what I would say to parents who are listening now, and I've got two little ones at home, you also need to be aware about small parts, choking hazards, things that can be a strangulation hazard, because we deal here at CPSC in not only with the acute hazards, but also chronics. And there are different hazards that a parent really needs to be aware of. And many of them we have tackled through recalls.
If you really want to go through that toy chest, can we find a resource on your website, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, to give us some guidance about parts that are too small, potentially hazardous materials in toys?
CPSC.gov is the place to go. We really make it easy. So long as you kind of know the name of the brand or the model, and we've got a way for you to search it really easy. Because it's so important for you to keep your kid safe, but also you don't want to pass it on to a neighbor. You don't want to sell it at a yard sale. You don't want to return it to a thrift store. You don't want to go on eBay or Craigslist. Because if you have a recalled product, it's now a violation of federal law to try to resell it and make a profit. You can't do that anymore.
Why was cadmium or is cadmium used to make a toy in the first place? What purpose does it serve?
Lead, cadmium, it's a metal that in some cases gives a product heft. It's very malleable. You can use it to build in colors and shapes. So, yes, these manufacturers are finding purposes for it, but it's unacceptable.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with Scott Wolfson, Director of Public Affairs at the Consumer Product Safety Commission, joining us by phone from Bethesda, Maryland. Scott, take us quickly through the product recall process. How does the CPSC learn about an unsafe product, and where do you go from there?
It's so important for parents to know that recalls can be started from multiple places. We are an agency that goes out and finds dangerous products on our own and generates recalls that way. Other times, and this is the predominant way that recalls happen, companies report to us as they are obligated to do under federal law and say, CPSC, we have a problem. We need to do a recall. In other cases, really great officials at the local and state level can report issues to us, even sometimes hospitals, first responders, through news clips we find out about things. Our job is to put the pieces together, connect the dots, find out what the hazard is. The one thing I want parents to know about us is when you hear about a recall from CPSC, that remedy, that free remedy, is available to you at that point.
Mm-hmm. What are the most common reasons for a children's toy, an item, to be recalled?
It probably is between a lead paint or a lead content, you know, violation, and then a small parts hazard would probably be number two.
Scott Wolfson, thank you for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thanks so much.
Scott Wolfson is Director of Public Affairs at the Consumer Product Safety Commission. When we come back after a short break, we continue our discussion about toxicology and toys. We'll talk more with Stephen Gilbert and Corrine Harrison. We'd like to have you join our conversation. Have you been affected by a toy recall? Tell us your story. Are you a parent? How do you keep your child safe? What questions do you have about the chemicals used to make toys and about toy safety? 1-866-780-9100 or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Twitter, IPR Talk. We'll be back after a short break. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. We're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, Des Moines has been selected as one of 18 sites across the U.S. for an unprecedented national discussion on our country's debt. And tomorrow, we'll talk with organizers of the event and find out what they hope to accomplish. Also on our program tomorrow, State Senator Joe Bolcom is due to be with us. He's back from a bike trip across the country of Slovenia. His mission? To learn about the country's efforts to reduce energy consumption. That's on the program tomorrow. Today, we're talking about recalls of toys with the backdrop of several toy recalls due to cadmium. Those collectible Shrek drinking glasses we heard about from McDonald's. I don't think they ever reached anybody's hands. Kids' necklaces as well from Claire's. Walmart had some necklaces, bracelets as well. Discussing toxicology and toys with Stephen Gilbert, author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, The Health Effects of Common Chemicals. He's also the director and founder of the Institute of Neurotoxicology and Neurological Disorders. Also joining us, Corinne Harrison, owner of Games and More at the Valley West Mall in Des Moines. And if you'd like to join our conversation with your toy recall story, or perhaps you have a comment or a question, a concern, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us theexchange at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPRTalk. And let's go to Stephen and Corinne. Stephen, we listened before the break to that conversation with Scott Wolfson of the Consumer Product Safety Division. Any reaction, something, any parts of that interview, what he said, jump out at you as something remarkable?
I think the remarkable thing is that the Consumer Product Safety Commission is really starting to do more testing and being much more proactive than it has been. It's been a very underfunded, sleepy organization in the federal government that really hasn't done a lot or wasn't doing a lot to protect child's health. I think the big lead recalls in toys is just a perfect example of that. So it's really great to see the Consumer Product Safety Commission really out in front of the issue on cadmium.
Mm-hmm. So the lead from 2007, that big scandal, taught them a lesson, and they are waking up, so to speak.
So to speak. That was outrageous that that happened, that we exposed our children to lead like that, because we've known for decades that lead is harmful. We worked hard to get out of gasoline, and we've banned lead-based paint. So it's just no reason for lead to show up. And there have been signs of that. It's showing up in jewelry. It's been in pottery. It was in blinds. It's used to stabilize plastics. There was just no reason for that problem over lead in toys.
Mm-hmm. So that's an improvement, being more proactive to not let this happen again, as it did in the case of lead. What could they still do better, in your opinion, the CPSC?
I think they need to be looking at more at some of the other chemicals that are being used. I think we have and this comes back to a much bigger problem than just them, that because we don't have a lot of the information we should have on the chemicals that are in common use. Bisphenol A is another example. I think the Consumer Product Safety Commission could be a lot more engaged in that issue. It's in baby bottles and can liners. Brominated flame retardants, another one. They've been banned now. But there are a lot of chemicals out there that we're exposed to that are in our day-to-day products. And again, I think children's toys are particularly deserve scrutiny because the children do tend to absorb more of these products. Their nervous systems and bodies are developing, so they're more vulnerable to the exposure to these chemicals.
Mm-hmm. Even as we speak, we're having this conversation live right now, but on the Internet, this is a product recall because of lead paint from the Consumer Product Safety Commission. Target recalling belts due to a violation of lead paint standard. I don't know if you're close to your computer, but it just popped up within the last few minutes. A voluntary recall of certain types of belts, belt buckles containing excessive levels of lead, violating the federal lead paint standard. So this is something that happens on a daily basis?
Yes, it happens all too commonly. Lead's easy to use. It's easy to use in manufacturing. It's very low melting temperature. It makes paint brighter. It dries faster. I mean, it's a great product, but it just doesn't belong in our children's products or products that can be easily handled, like that belt buckle that a child or an adult is going to come in contact with and get a little bit of that lead on their fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And that ends up then ingesting that lead. So, again, it's just we need to be more diligent. I think the manufacturers have got to just stay away from lead, however tempting it is to be used.
Corinne Harrison, I want to go to our callers, 1-866-780-9100. Before we do that, I want to get your reaction. You heard Scott Wolfson of the Consumer Product Safety Commission. From your perspective as a shop owner at Valley West Mall, owner of Games and More in West Des Moines, in Des Moines, what is your reaction to what he said? Anything jump out at you?
It did. I was really shocked that he didn't talk about, there's a lot of controversy over the CPSC not having feeling like they have the ability to assess risk. the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act has made such rigid standards. And, of course, we want our children safe, but you have to be able to assess risk. One of the big controversies was over a brass bushing that was holding the wheel onto the axle of a truck. And that's covered where it's outlawed because brass has lead. And yet our children are exposed to brass zippers, grommets, doorknobs, locker handles. There's things all over the place. Brass instruments. Are we going to outlaw the brass section in our school bands?
There goes the orchestra,
So, I mean, I respect Stephen. He said a lot of neat things, but he hasn't referred to any levels. We have to, I mean, the cigarette smoking with the cadmium, that's huge. They have huge amounts in there. You know, a lot of it is absorbed by smokers, and they have large concentrations, you know, way higher than the normal public in their kidneys and their blood. And it would be nice if we could have zero toxicity, and we can't, and I'm not a supporter of saying we need to have these things, but the CPSC needs to be able to assess the risk. You know, if kids are touching zippers and handles and all these things on a daily basis and playing brass instruments for 30 years, how is the little piece of brass bushing on a toy truck going to bring somebody down? And it can bring down a business.
Steve, let's go to that point, Corinne, since you mentioned it. How do these recalls, these concerns affecting recalls, the way this gets into the press and the real dangers they pose, what kind of burden does that place on you as an owner, a businesswoman?
I need you to clarify that. I apologize.
All these recalls, how much time and effort and expense do you put towards recalls?
Oh, you know, honestly, I don't think of it that way, and I don't feel like it's a big burden at all. We simply, you know, as soon as we hear of something, it doesn't take that long to locate everything we have, even though I have a huge store. We get it off the shelves. We pack it up for return to the manufacturer. We post the signs, and we talk, you know, with our customers personally. I even involved myself in one that didn't involve my store when Tylenol recently recalled almost all their children's cold products. I printed it out, taped it to our counter. I printed out handouts for every customer that had grandkids or kids so they could actually take home and assess what was in their cabinets. I don't even sell it. So I don't mind. I don't feel like it is a burden at all.
Okay, let's go make sure we include plenty of callers in the rest of our hour. 1-866-780-9100. Your questions and concerns, your stories about child toy recalls and the like. Jennifer is joining us. Jennifer, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from La Villa.
La Villa, hi. Welcome to our program.
I just have a recommendation. I had a little stepsister, and this has been quite a few years ago, 10 years ago, at least 15 years maybe. But she had a lot of health problems, and come to find out she had lead poisoning, and through a lot of searching and trying to figure out where that was coming from, it was from crayons that were at her daycare. And she was one of those kids that has the habit of eating crayons and chewing on pencils and things like that when she was small. So she was ingesting a lot of lead from some cheaply made crayons, and the daycare had not paid attention to the non-toxic labels that are put on those sort of products. So just a recommendation to parents that, you know, check out the things that are at your daycare and your child's school as well.
Stephen Gilbert, I thought the government was supposed to be watching out for us. How is it possible to buy crayons, which everyone knows go into children's mouths as often as they hit the paper, that you can even buy such crayons?
Well, hopefully that's not the case anymore. You wouldn't be able to buy those anymore. I think one thing that's really changed in the last 5 years or so is the testing for products has gotten a lot easier. They have a technology called X-ray fluorescence that makes testing for lead, cadmium, and other metals in products a lot easier and cheaper to do. So I think that's one reason we're finding it. We're doing a lot more testing, and I think consumers and other public health groups are doing more testing of products also. And I just want to make quickly a comment on risk. I think Corinne makes a great point about looking at risk, but I also think you have to take a precautionary approach. I'm a believer in the precautionary principle, and we have a system with our Food and Drug Administration that takes a very precautionary approach to releasing new drugs on the market, where the pharmaceutical and biotechnology industry has to do a lot of testing to put these products on the market. We don't do a similar degree of testing when we put new products on the market for our kids. what might be in those products, what new chemicals, what the hazard of those chemicals are.
Hmm. Okay, let's go to Robert in Fairfield. Robert dialed 1-866-780-9100, looking for your thoughts, concerns, questions, stories about toy recalls due to hazardous substances. Robert, good afternoon.
Hi. You're speaking of testing, and that's exactly my question. Isn't it possible for a home test to be developed for cadmium or lead so that parents could test toys and things themselves and not put the burden on your agency, which, of course, is not going to be able to test everything?
Stephen?
Yes, there is a testing kit you can go. You can go to most hardware stores, and they have a little chemical, and this is for lead. And you break this, it has a little swab, and the swab will turn pink if there's lead there. But it's very qualitative, and it does not really get at very low levels of lead exposure. So you don't know how much lead is there, and it's not so good for paint. Like if it's a home, you have walls been painted over with another paint. You need to get to those second layers. If the home was built before 1978, there's a chance it has lead-based paint in it, which is slightly sweet, and kids will consume those paint chips. So you have to be really careful with home testing, but there is that option to look at the swabs that you can buy in the hardware stores.
But nothing for cadmium, though?
Not that I know of. I don't know of anything for cadmium.
Okay, thank you.
Robert, thank you for calling from Fairfield, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. I'm reminded of a question that I asked of Robert or Scott Wolfson of the Consumer Product Safety Commission, which didn't really, to my mind, get a satisfactory answer. We have, no doubt, parents listening who are looking at the kids' toy boxes and say, well, we've been lax in so many ways up to now, up to recent years, in checking the children's toys for hazardous materials. What about the toys in the toy box that are old toys, going back 5, 10 years? What do we do about those, Stephen? How do we know they are safe?
You know, that is a really good question, a big issue. You know, I have a granddaughter, and we have an old rocking horse downstairs. And I looked at that, and part of it's white-based paint, and she was down there and noticed this thing and got on and played around with it. And the first thing I did when I got her upstairs was I washed her hands. You know, in our house, it's wash, wash. Always wash your hands. I think that's the most important thing you can do. But it brought to my mind, you know, does that old hobby horse have lead-based paint on it? My guess it does. It was probably manufactured in the 40s or 50s. And I think that's a really big issue. Like I said, testing has gotten easier, so you can. There are some companies out there that you can come in. There's some parties where they have these X-ray fluorescence equipment that's easily test the product, so parents can take their toys. And I think the comment about looking at daycare centers is also really important. Daycare centers have got to be really on top of this issue, and they should be, you know, have somebody come out and look around their products, look around the area, and see if there's any lead contamination.
Let's go to our next caller. Dick is calling from Dubuque. Hi, Dick.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, this subject's near and dear to my heart. I was a toy safety manager for years here in Iowa. But
for what organization, Dick?
For Hurdle Toys.
And Hurdle Toys,
Now, part of this problem is similar to the problem with BP. It's the philosophy, a switch of philosophy that government isn't the solution, it's the problem. And that, you know, that when I back 30 years ago, the CPSC officers would come and check our records at Dyersville. They'd actually stop by periodically and check our testing records. And actually, there's 8 heavy elements. So we were testing for all of them at that time. And like I say, things slacked up, partly because of a philosophy, sort of like BP philosophy, controls. But
you mean deregulation, you think, has contributed to a laxer attitude towards testing of these things?
It did, because we actually had CPSC officials come to our plant periodically to inspect our records, and that stopped probably in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, let me get Stephen Gilbert's view on that. Does that match up with your findings, Stephen?
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. I think that regulation certainly has its place. You don't play basketball, football, or baseball without rules and a referee. And I think the government agencies need to be there to enforce the rules and make sure that business has a level playing field and that we have safe products out there. I think he makes a really great point that You know, we do need regulation, and we do need business. It's not just going cheaper, faster, and better. It's also safety has to be, and health has to be a big component of this.
Okay, Dick, another quick point to make?
Yeah, well, we were also concerned, you know, about even the manufacturing conditions in China, like the OSHA and EPA-type standards. So we were pushing a lot of things at the time. But the Toy Manufacturer Association is a great organization. They developed this voluntary standard, the ASTM F963. There's actually an American Society of Testing Materials. It's a nice handbook of toy testing. The other thing, on old toys floating around, you still see some of the small Fisher-Price figures floating around that would fit in a small Parks gauge. They doubled or tripled the size of their figures years ago, but you still see some of the small ones floating around as far as parents identifying small toys.
So this is, Dick, this, like yard sales, of course, you would find a lot of old toys at yard sales,
many years old,
so maybe a wary eye there, right?
Right. Like, you can identify small parts. Well, you can use a simple cake gauge, a toilet paper roll, but there is an actual gauge, but there, you know, you do see those figures floating around, and they changed those. Fisher-Price changed those years and years ago.
Okay.
So, Dick, thanks.
Thank you very much for your comments.
Okay, bye.
And Dick there from Dubuque, formerly of Hurdle Toys, to Richard in Iowa City. Richard.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. There was a toy safety certification program that was set up by the Toy Industry Association that used the standard that Dick had talked about, the ASTM F963, and it was suspended. It had begun to set up a toy certification program where certified test labs would take a product from a toy manufacturer and take it through this ASTM standard. I was wondering why that was suspended.
Okay, Stephen, I don't know if you have background about this. Do you know, Richard, when it was suspended?
About February.
Of this year?
Yes.
Okay, Stephen, any knowledge on that?
No, I don't. I'm sorry. I don't have any knowledge about why that would be.
Okay, Richard,
I was an assessor for the American National Standards Institute, and we had gone all over the world to visit laboratories and to certify them to a higher level called Guide 65, which is a product certification with the Toy Industry Association requirements as well. And we were certifying labs in the U.S., in China, Hong Kong, Zhangmutou, and it was really gaining momentum, and then all of a sudden it was surprisingly suspended, and I never got a word as to exactly what the background or why it was suspended.
Okay, Richard, sorry we can't provide any further information on that. Richard from Iowa City, which reminds me, Stephen, can you comment about how the U.S. does compared to other countries? Are there other countries that do a much better job of checking their toys for hazardous materials, making sure that doesn't get into the stream of products on our shelves?
Yeah, you know, by and large, Europe has been ahead of the game here, and they've done better rules and regulations about trying to keep these hazardous products, like lead, for example. I don't know specifically about cadmium, but there were problems with the U.S. actually being a dumping ground for these products because they got shifted away from Europe, and they, you know, more hazardous products would be shifted to the U.S. So it's United States has not taken the lead. We've not taken the lead either in looking at chemical safety. There's a European program called REACH, Registration, Evaluation, Authorization of Chemicals, and they are doing more testing before they get into the products, and they're trying to do testing to assess chemical hazards. So the United States has really fallen behind in consumer safety. And there's a bill before Congress right now called Safe Chemicals Act, and I encourage your listeners to look into that bill because that's really trying to reform and provide EPA with more authority to assess chemical hazards.
An email from Brad in Des Moines. Shower curtains were mentioned by your guest. He writes, I was wondering if the liners for swimming pools contain the same rubber softeners, and if so, do children absorb that chemical through the water?
You know, I would think that the chemical liners or the pool liners probably do. I'm sure they contain something that softens them. Phthalates being one. A lot of the vinyls will also have lead or cadmium in it to stabilize the plastic, the PVC plastics. I don't know specifically what the liner would be made out of, but with the water, the dilution would be enormous in a swimming pool, so I wouldn't be as concerned in a swimming pool. You've got other concerns with hygiene and things like that, but I think it's a good example. I think another example is artificial turf, and artificial turf, they found a lot of lead contaminating that. So I think we need to be really careful with the products. I think that's a great question about pool liners, and somebody, you know, it'd be fun to find an answer to that.
Corinne and Stephen, we have just over a minute left. A very quick, if I can give you each a half a minute to tell me what would be your wish as the one thing that could be done that would improve us in this area. Corinne, can I start with you?
Again, I just wish that the government would allow some more flexibility in assessing risk so that it can be done with some intelligence. Again, we don't want our school bans outlawed, and we also want our kids to be safe, so we've got to assess the risks.
Being able to assess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the CPSC staff even considered those same bushings I talked about. They said they felt they were safe. They did not rise to the level of a hazardous substance, but they believed that the Improvement Act gave them no flexibility.
Stephen Gilbert, final words from you before we have to go?
I think we as in general need to be a lot more aware of the chemicals, and I really would like to see more broadly a chemical policy reform that we have better testing these chemicals before they get on the market, that we're not always playing catch-up with phthalates and brominated flame retardants and lead and cadmium, that we're being proactive and precautionary. We're preventing things and not dealing with them after they get started.
Stephen Gilbert, thank you very much. Stephen Gilbert, the director and founder of the Institute of Neurotoxicology and Neurological Disorders. Stephen, that website people can go to once again?
It's toxipedia.org, and it has a whole range of chemicals. We put chemical information, scientific information, in the context of history, society, and culture.
Toxipedia.org, A Small Dose of Toxicology, the title of Stephen's book, The Health Effects of Common Chemicals. Corinne Harrison, thank you for joining us, the owner of Games and More, a toy store at the Valley West Mall in Des Moines. Thank you, Corinne.
Thank you very much.
The Exchange is produced by Lindsay Moon, Catherine Perkins, Jeff Schmidt, and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Christoph Mai. Technical support from Julie Englander. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.